Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Forbes magazine has repeatedly selected Marilyn Carlson Nelson as one of the world's 100 most powerful women. But as a daughter, wife, mother, and grandmother, Ms. Nelson has always put people first. This multifaceted woman also happens to be one of the most successful CEOs in the world. Marilyn Carlson Nelson is chairman and CEO of Carlson, a global group of companies providing travel, hotel, cruise, restaurant, and marketing services, including such brands as Radisson and Regent Hotels and Resorts. In her new book, How We Lead Matters, she shares her thoughts on the role of women in leadership and the importance of believing in yourself. Marilyn, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you, Dave. I'm delighted to be here.
Why did you choose the title, How We Lead Matters?
I chose the title, How We Lead Matters, because my grandson asked me one day if I was alive during segregation. And of course, I was taken aback a little, thinking, was that the 1964 Civil Rights Act, or was that the Civil War, or what prompted the question? But in any case, I looked at him and I realized that he saw me, like many CEOs or parents or grandparents for that matter, in one role. And he was unaware of the fights I'd fought, the things I cared about, where my passions were, and what changes had come about that I had not only experienced, but hopefully in some ways impacted. So I made the decision that I should at least record the small vignettes that I'd been using with corporate groups to exemplify or to amplify points that I wanted to make about values that were important to me, experiences that were important, or lessons that I wanted to teach.
How has the role of women in leadership changed over your career?
The role of women in leadership has changed dramatically over my career. When I first began in the early 60s, I was a security analyst. There weren't any registered representatives at that time. I was asked to sign my work, M.C. Nelson, because I was told that men would not buy stock recommended by a woman. I know that sounds impossible to believe, but in fact, I was delighted to sign M.C. Nelson. My daughters think that's shocking, that I should have revolted and refused, but instead, I was thrilled with the opportunity to demonstrate my prowess. I understood business models, I understood P&L's balance sheets, and I recommended stock under the name M.C. Nelson. At that point, I was newly out of school. My husband and I were married, and I had to announce to my boss that I was expecting a child. It was very disturbing to him. At that point in history, there was a sense that a pregnant woman should not be on the floor of a professional business setting. So in order to allow me to continue my work, which they were respectful of, they gave me a private office with the secretary and moved me around the corner so people didn't have to be exposed to this pregnant woman. Since then, with Title VII, VIII, IX, we've had policy changes that encourage women's participation, and I'm thrilled with some vignettes in the book that actually are milestones in the progress that women have made. Of course, it starts with my story of my early work and having to have a pseudonym. It goes through my experience as a director of one of the Bell operating companies, where the CEO at the breakup of the original Bell system, a time that there was a lot of tension in the system, actually used that opportunity to remove the phone company's funding for the Rotary clubs, the Lions clubs that had been rejecting women or rejecting minorities, or at least not accepting them as members unless they allowed these women and minority executives to belong. So I learned from him that there's never a perfect time for change, and that using our voice and using our platform to make a difference was important. And of course, now I truly believe that whether it's a nation or a company, drawing from the entire gender pool is the only way to compete. Today, we've moved from manufacturing to services to a knowledge economy, and we're fighting for intellectual capital, and we need to make our environments friendly to a whole range of people because, of course, talent doesn't come in one gender or one nationality.
Marilyn, do you have one specific bit of advice for women in business?
Of course, always believe in yourself. We need to continue to be well-prepared because in a flat, globalized world, we're competing not with the people at the next desk, but we're competing with people across the world. So being prepared is more important than ever. I think that women tend sometimes to feel that if they have to go home for a couple of years to care for a child or an aging parent, that needs to be the end of a career. Life is long. We don't have to make difficult choices because we don't have to do everything at once. We can keep our priorities. We can stop out. Most of the data says that women who stop out for about 2 years and 3 months, and then re-enter. I would recommend, if you can, get a business degree if you want to go into business. That may mean taking your business school at night or on weekends. Look for a great place for working women. There are lists of great places to work, great places for working mothers. Why not put yourself in an organization that is already acknowledged as wanting you there? At Carlson, we now have 49% female executives. I'm extremely proud of that. And probably one of the greatest achievements that I could perhaps at least lay claim to having stimulated would be creating a meritocracy. If I was a young woman, I would look long and hard to see what the patterns are in the places that I was applying, because clearly it can be a cultural priority. For example, at Carlson, we've put in adoption rights. We have a daycare center. We have flex time. We have ergonomics for moms. We've tried to understand when you're expecting how you can work more efficiently and effectively and comfortably without ending up with some physical issues about your work setting. Young women have more opportunities than ever today, but whether you're a woman or any other minority in a work setting, I would recommend that when you come up against indignities or challenges, that you challenge your anger and work for change. Take personal accountability. I've seen too many people whose anger actually, in some ways, defeated them in a particular setting. That said, if you can't change the setting and you do feel that it's inconsistent with your values or not a true meritocracy, I would not begin a lawsuit. I would simply find a new place to work. There are many places to work that provide respectful opportunity.
I believe the Carlson motto is a great place for great people to do great work. By any chance, did you coin that phrase?
We were thinking about the employee profit chain and how important it is to take good care of employees and that they then will take good care of the customers who then reward the share owners who can reinvest in the company. And I think it's C.K. Prahalad who talks about the employee profit chain. Well, that sounded very academic. And I thought, as a leader, how can I communicate emotionally about this and then put various strategies and tactics in place to execute? So it was aspirational. We called it Great Place for Great People to Do Great Work. I think we should have called it Great Places because, in fact, we operate in so many countries around the world. But the premise was that we would, first of all, create a work environment where there was respect, where people had the right tools to do their job, where people were committed to quality, one that was friendly and encouraged friendships. Most of the Gallup work demonstrates that if you have a best friend at work, a confidant, someone that you're close to, that it actually improves your engagement. And of course, employee engagement is the key to happy customers. So we put tactics around what kind of place we wanted to be, how we were going to train supervisors to make certain that work units had those requisite tools and attitudes and communications that would help them to be successful and help people to be engaged. And then we put in a profile model of the type of person who was most successful at Carlson. If you can imagine a face of a compass, in the center for us is self-knowledge, integrity. On the north is relationship building. We all know that successful business is based on successful relationships. On the south is discipline. We know that we have to comply with laws. We have to follow corporate policies. On the west side is performance. We're in a competitive world. We all know the Olympics was won by 1/100th of a second, that this is the kind of business world that we're in today. So performance and competitive drive is important, but it has to be balanced with some sense of stewardship. We know in recent history that we have some egregious examples where the drive for performance perhaps overwhelmed the wisdom of stewardship, and the perceived reward was great enough for the acceptance of risk, which turned out to impact negatively thousands and thousands of people. So if you have the right setting, the right people, then you have the probability of doing great work, because you can develop relationships with customers that get clarity around your promises, and the right people develop the commitment as well as the expertise to serve them well.
What do you hope readers will take away from your book after they've read it?
I want them to think about personal leadership. Every individual is a leader. Every individual has 24/7 opportunities to make choices. I want them to think about personal accountability before they ask themselves questions or ask each other questions about why don't they fix it? Why don't they do something about this? Ask instead, what am I doing? There's a story in the book about accountability, about my father teaching me accountability by asking me to fix Sunday school at a very large downtown church when I was only 12. His lesson for me is what lesson I would like to give to the readers, and that is we can make the world a better place if we collaborate and take personal responsibility to use the platforms that we have at hand. I want them to see the humor in my story about gerbils. I want them to cry with me over the loss of my daughter. I want them to recognize that there is no role, there is no amount of power or wealth that can protect any of us from the deepest sorrows and the greatest joys of life. This little book is meant to be a gift, and I hope those who read it will accept it as such.
Our guest today has been Marilyn Carlson Nelson. She's author of the new book, How We Lead Matters, Reflections on a Life of Leadership. Marilyn, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Dave.
As always, we'd love to get your feedback. So please drop us an email at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.